The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning, and welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We're located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. Today, wherever you are, that's where we are. We are a congregation, a Unitarian Universalist congregation, that it's dedicated to nurturing the spirit and transforming the world. We're so glad you are able to join us today. Whoever you are, wherever you are in your life journey, wherever you are in your spiritual journey, whomever you love, whatever your gender or gender expression, you are welcome here. If you happen to be a visitor to us today, then we want to give you a special welcome. And you will notice in the chat box, there is a link to our virtual visitor card. This gives you an opportunity to tell us what you might want to learn about us and any communications that we could send to you, as well as for us to get to know you. So welcome to this time of worship. The opening words I've chosen for today are from Howard Thurman, who I'll be talking about in the sermon. These words are from his autobiography, With Head and Heart. He writes, "My testimony is that life is against all dualism. Life is one. Therefore, a way of life that is worth living must be a way worthy of life itself. Nothing less than that can abide. Always against all that fragments and shatters, and against all that separates and divides within and without, life labors to meld together into a single harmony." And we'll now light our chalice.
Good morning. Our chalice lighting this morning is also from Howard Thurman. "The mystic is no coward, sticking their head in the sand, praying to God because they are scared or because they do not have the nerve to do anything else. But the mystic is sure that they are in touch with terrible energy. And if they can be a point of focus through which that energy hits its mark in the world, then the redemptive process can work." As we light our chalice this morning, let us open our hearts to that energy that transforms within us and through us.
And now I will light the peace lamp. Your response will be, "And with all the people of the world." May peace be with us and with all the people of the world.
Our gathering hymn is "Rank by Rank, Again We Stand." Join in. The lyrics will be on the screen, and join in when you feel ready.
Rank by rank again we stand, from the four winds gathered hither, loud the hallowed walls demand whence we come and how and whither, from the stillness breaking clear, echoes wake to warn or cheer. Deeds that beckon from the dreaming of the crown they won, what they dreamed be ours to do. Hope their hopes and seal them true.
Let's join in a time of meditation. This meditation was actually composed by Howard Thurman, and it's entitled, How Good to Center Down. How good it is to center down, to sit quietly and see one's self pass by. The streets of our minds seethe with endless traffic. Our spirits resound with clashings, with noisy silences, while something deep within hungers and thirsts for the still moment and the resting lull. With full intensity, we seek ere the quiet passes, a fresh sense of order in our living, a direction, a strong, sure purpose that will structure our confusion and bring meaning in our chaos. We look at ourselves in this waiting moment, the kinds of people we are. The questions persist. What are we doing with our lives? What are the motives that order our days? What is the end of our doings? Where are we trying to go? Where do we put the emphasis? And where are our values focused? For what end do we make sacrifices? Where is my treasure? And what do I love most in life? What do I hate most in life? And to what am I true? Over and over, the questions beat in upon the waiting moment as we listen, floating up through all the jangling echoes of our turbulence. There is a sound of another kind, a deeper note, which only the stillness of heart makes clear. It moves directly to the core of our being. Our questions are answered, our spirits refreshed, and we move back into the traffic of our daily round with peace of the eternal in our step. How good it is to center down. Let's join, continue in this time of meditation as we listen to the musical.
Thank you.
We often imagine divisions that don't actually exist, except in our own construction of them. For example, we imagine that there's a hard indivisibility between heart and head, between feelings and facts, between intuition and reason, between the individual and the community, between spirituality and social action. We live within these divided lives that we've constructed, and then we wonder why we do not feel whole or adequate enough to get us through each day, running on a half a tank or half a heart. In order to navigate this each crisis, each transition in our life or in our world, we need to find an anchor that does not sway us off our center. Upheaval, disruption, and uncertainty are inevitable. Yet we don't need to be carried away by every current. It may be that the only way to navigate all of these currents and torrents of life is to discover what it means again to live wholeheartedly, rather than to succumb to the acceptable norm of half-heartedness. Now, I'll be the first to admit that it's hard to live in a wholehearted way, to really care deeply about justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, as stated in one of our Unitarian Universalist principles, to really care about the fate of the earth or the dispossessed or the oppressed can feel overwhelming and oftentimes paralyzing. Lately, to care about democratic processes and facts can have you labeled as too political and to be dismissed from polite conversation. Let's face it, to care too much means to risk being constantly and consistently disappointed by the powers and principalities that make decisions that often can seem to be so self-centered or misguided and not focused on the common good. To be alive in this postmodern and ecological age, to be living in this time of the great turning, means that we can easily succumb to divisiveness, to despair, and to discouragement. For some of us, the temptation is to retreat within ourselves. We tell ourselves and one another, don't watch the TV news, don't read the newspapers, don't look at Facebook, as if we can pretend that we are not interconnected, that we are not all impacted one way or another, some more than others, by what's going on. So we joke in my house that there are photos of me as a young child that show me with sturdy legs, just imagine it, fat, sturdy legs, which we jokingly call my sturdies. Photos of me as a young child often picture me with a wide-eyed gaze upon the world. There are still qualities of sturdiness and unabashed wide-eyedness within me that have never left. And I suspect that in each of us, there are these qualities of sturdiness, of unabashed wide-eyedness within each of us, waiting to be activated, I'm sure, ready to be tapped, I'm certain. I draw strength at times from the words and the experiences of others alive or those who've passed on, of those who I knew or those I never knew. And of one of those persons is my focus today, Howard Thurman. Howard Thurman, who was the author of our meditation this morning, reminds us again how good it is to center down, to sit quietly and to see one's self pass by. The streets of our minds seethe with endless traffic, he says. Our spirits resound with clashing, with noisy silences, while something deep within hungers and thirsts for the still moment and the resting lull. Perhaps you know about that hunger or that thirst within yourself. I think his words and his meditations can often call us back to that centering place, not as a place of escape, but a place to launch our life again and again each day. particularly when we may feel led more towards despair or discouragement. We need that place of launching, of acting again, of believing again, of hoping again. So Howard Thurman was a unique wisdom figure and a spiritual guide to people of many faiths. Interestingly enough, he speaks both to those who call themselves mystical or have a mystic sentiment, and also those who have a passion for social justice. He speaks to those who hunger for the holy and for those who hunger for justice. And he gives them reason to care about both. His unique perspectives on the connection between the inner life and what he called the social order was forged within his own lived experiences. Thurman lived from 1900 until 1981, so you can imagine that the times in which he lived, of course, meant that as an African-American man, he was born in oppressive circumstances. In his case, he was born in a segregated town in Daytona, Florida, which meant that by high school, he had to leave home in order to continue school. Although considered by some one of the greatest spiritual resources in this nation, many have not even heard of him. Since I attended Boston University School of Theology, where Thurman had for decades before been the dean of Marsh Chapel at BU, I had some opportunity to study Thurman and to learn of his writings, of his life. Years before, Martin Luther King Jr. also had attended that school and encountered Thurman in person. So I learned that Thurman was a mentor to many contemporary figures in the civil rights movement. In addition to Martin Luther King Jr., these included James Farmer, Marion Wright Edelman, Jesse Jackson, and much later included such people as Barack Obama. So he's a wisdom figure as well to many of us today who seek to find some anchoring guidance that speaks to both our soul and to our care for the world. Beyond these divisions that we usually construct between the personal spiritual life and social action, between personal growth and social transformation, Thurman provides an integral, holistic perspective that doesn't divide what is actually not divided. Remember, he wrote, "Always against all that fragments and shatters and against all things that separate and divide within and without, life labors to meld together into a single harmony." So Thurman went from humble, oppressive beginnings to find new spiritual pathways relevant to the spiritual and the social conditions of his own time. He even went to India and studied nonviolent resistance with Mahatma Gandhi and the followers of Gandhi. He introduced countless others in this country to this way of being and acting in the midst of the social turmoil of the civil rights movement of the 50s and the 60s. Thurman's own religious guide was his maternal grandmother, Nancy Ambrose, whose wisdom and disciplined spirituality nurtured him while he was still with her and still nurtured him throughout his life in the memory of those early formative years. He writes that he was nurtured by the dynamics of the church and the Black community in Daytona, Florida. And although he traveled far from there, these were indeed his enduring roots, his enduring spiritual roots. Yet underlying the presence of his grandmother's devotion and the power of the Black church and the support of the Black community, there was another current in his life. From early on in his life, that current is what many of us know as a mystical sensibility. That mystic sensibility can be like an underground stream within that may first have found us, but then we continue to find ways to remember, to bask, and to bathe in the experience ever so subtly throughout our lives, because it is what feels most real. It gives us a vantage point in which to see life within a broader perspective, a more extensive rhythm, and to be attuned to a silent pulse within. Thurman tells of his divine encounter in his own early childhood and recalls it this way. As a boy in Florida, I had this sense of stillness. I held my breath against the night and I watched the stars etch their brightness on the face of the darkened canopy of the heavens. I had the sense that all things, the sand, the sea, the night, and I, were one lung through which all of life breathed. Maybe his encounter resonates with something in your own experience. Perhaps you've arrived at this sensibility in some different way other than this natural mysticism that Thurman describes. Indeed, our intelligence and our imagination and our inspiration are all intertwined in us in intricate ways. So the glimpses of much more than our simple mental maps of the world can contain are often revealed to us in various ways, in nature, in art, in personal experiences, through love, through solitude, or through prayer. I recall the days when I traveled around the country and led a workshop with Unitarian Universalists about reflecting on their own particular faith. And many of them in those workshops expressed this mystical sensibility by those words or others in those workshops as critical to their own faith and faith formation. I believe that for Thurman, these kinds of experiences are what anchored him during some of the turbulent, troubling, and terrifying times in which he lived, ministered, and taught. These are what kept him moving forward and kept him engaged when retreat or despair or not daring to care would have been so much easier. It was this kind of sensitivity that allowed him to appreciate the many and the differing paths through which people related to the divine, the holy, the most meaningful, or goodness in their lives. Rabbi Zalman Schachter Shalomi tells this story, and early in his career in 1955, Reb Zalman decided with some hesitation to attend a program at Boston University in the psychology of religion, a Christian theological school by tradition. And as an Orthodox Jew at the time, he was accustomed to doing his morning prayers as close to sunrise as possible. But he did live some distance from the school on the South Shore of Boston, New Bedford, if you know the geography. And in order to arrive in time for his class at 8 a.m., he did his prayers at the school after he arrived. So he couldn't find a place that was open to do his prayers, except he did locate in the basement of the Marsh Chapel a room that did not have that didn't have a lot of Christian images. He had to search around to find that room. And he found that room, and he did this several mornings, until one day a middle-aged Black man said to him as he was rushing out for his 8 a.m. class, "I've seen you here several times. Wouldn't you like to say your prayers in the small chapel? It's much more comfortable, much more attractive." So Reb Zalman was still trying to figure out what to say to the man, and afraid to hurt the man's feelings by saying anything about the cross that was a little disturbing to him in the room. But yet the man said, "Why don't you stop by the chapel tomorrow morning and take a look?" And so when Reb Zalman arrived in the chapel the next morning, he found that the cross had been removed, and in their place were two candles burning in brass candlesticks, with a giant Bible between them, and it was open to that verse in the Psalms, Psalm 139. "Whether shall I flee from thy presence?" So what makes the story interesting is Reb Zalman later discovered that this middle-aged Black man was actually Howard Thurman, the dean of the chapel. And so they became friends during his time there. Thurman had earlier in his life had a dream of actually creating a religious fellowship that would open its life to all seekers of all colors and creeds. And so that dream was realized when he moved to San Francisco, he and his wife, and he was invited to start the church entitled Church for the Fellowship of All Peoples. He served there for 9 years, and the congregation still exists to this day. And it's also actually been served by many Unitarian Universalist clergy over the years, as well as others. I share his history with you to give you a sense of a life that was propelled by purpose, inspired by a mystic vision, and engaged fully in the world. Through his teaching and preaching and writing, he spoke to both old and young, people of African and European descent and other ethnicities, indeed from a number of religions and backgrounds. I share these stories with you because I believe that they are a reminder to each of us to think beyond our usual divisions and to allow ourselves to recognize that we can often look beyond and through some of the theological ideas that we think divide us and still find connections with one another. And at the very least, we can express the kind of hospitality that Thurman was so accustomed to providing to others of faiths other than his own, because of that deeper sensibility and connection, understanding that others as he were wanting that connection with what was holy, what was divine, what was good in life itself. Barbara Brown Taylor, who's a contemporary religious writer, she's an Episcopal priest and a teacher, she writes of Thurman, everything he said, wrote, taught, and did flowed from a single course, which was his direct and incontrovertible encounter with the divine. That was how he discovered the really real, which funded his courage to challenge the unreal in all of its guises, injustices, unkindness, and unreconciliation and unfreedom. I believe it was his contemplative life that fed his social activism. And his social activism flowed from his contemplative and mystic sensibility. This intersection between social action and mysticism was so integral to him that he wrote, "Every living thing belongs to every other living thing, and I can never be what I ought to be until the last living manifestation of life is what it ought to be." For better or for worse, he wrote, "I'm tied into the idiom of everything that lives. And if I forget this, I profane God's creation. If I remember it, I come to myself in you, and you come into yourself in me." It was this kind of perspective, this kind of real, what was really real for him, that allowed him to really propel his own life and thought in ways that could be important and impactful during the social challenges of the civil rights movement of his time. So he kept on moving forward. He kept on moving forward when there could have been so many reasons for him to give up, to relinquish hope, and to limit his possibilities. But he was a resilient soul and an example, I think, of breaking down barriers through a tireless spirit and through what Gandhi would call a soul force. Some found it hard to appreciate the fullness of Thurman's soul. The story is told that once when Thurman met with a group of young Black activists during the rise of the civil rights movement, after the meeting, they spoke to their leaders and they said, "We thought we were going to be meeting with an activist. We found out he's a mystic instead." Yet others knew that Thurman was both a mystic and a social prophet. He inspired many activists who are said to have carried his book entitled Jesus and the Disinherited with them. Martin Luther King said he carried that book by Thurman in his briefcase throughout his life, wherever he went. And perhaps some of you have recognized that Thurman is someone who was propelled to engage in life rather than sit on the sidelines, because he saw within life itself something sacred, something mysterious, something that wanted to unfold within life itself, but also through our own engagement with life. Now, perhaps some of you have participated in an activity that's called a values continuum. The way it works is that it's often done in a workshop or something where you're asked to stand on one part of the room to represent where you stand on that value or that particular position, and stand in another part of the room for another part. So, for example, you might say, those who believe in God stand to the right of this room. Those who don't believe in God stand to the left. Those who are committed to love stand over there. Those who are committed to justice stand over there. So those who have a primary commitment to being Unitarian Universalists through your spirituality, and that's your major commitment and connection to Unitarian Universalism, stand over there. Those who have social justice as a primary commitment, you stand over there. So you can imagine what happens in such an exercise if even in your imagination you were doing it along with me. There are some who move with velocity to one side of the room or the other to claim their position, and they plant themselves on the right or the left. There are others who roam around close to but next to one side or the other, but not exactly on that particular spot. They're still pondering, they're hovering. And there are those who want to stand in the middle. Now, there's some of those I've discovered who just don't want to commit to anything. So we'll put those aside for the moment. There are others that stand in that middle space because they cannot divide themselves one way or another, because they see that in their middle space, there's a richness and a possibility that cannot be reduced to one position or another. I believe it's that middle space that Thurman helps us to explore and discover. It's that middle space between the intersection of spirituality and social justice that Thurman helped many discover for themselves. It is what Thomas Merton called the hidden wholeness. And I believe we can be anchored in that hidden wholeness and that uniting of both head and heart, that connection between justice and love. We can be united beyond the divisions that we construct and begin to discover a connection and a wholeness that is always there. Like breathing, the care of our breath includes a kind of an in-breath, and that inner breath can represent for us our inner life. And our out-breath can represent our concern for the world. So let's take a moment and just do that for a moment. As you breathe in, bring your care and attention to your own self, to your own soul for a moment. And linger there for just a bit. And as you breathe out, imagine yourself breathing out concern for the world, for what the world is, what the world can become. Like breathing, our in-breath, our inner life, our out-breath, our concern for the world is indivisible. They are both connected. And that's what Thurman's message was, So that's the message I believe he has for us when we would rather retreat from all of the overwhelm, uncertainty, and disappointment in our world. May we find a strength, a way to center down, and to use that centering down as a launching pad for moving out once more, to taking a step much more once more. Hope is not just a feeling, as Joanna Macy says in her work. Hope needs to be active hope. It needs to be a practice that you do each day. And you ask yourself, what is a step that I can take this day that would bring more hope in my life, that would bring more hope in the world, that would give more hope to others? And then to take that step in the direction of hope so that we can each be a channel of that hope in our own lives and in one another. And sometimes we won't be able to practice, but like any practice, we just return to that practice again and again. So may it be. Yeah. So this is the time in our service where we take a moment to breathe in, to attend to our own life, our own heart, to what it is that we're holding in our life, in our heart, a joy or concern. Be a joy for others or joy for ourselves, concern for ourselves or others that we care about. This is also a time for us to reflect on the service, and if there's a thought that you want to hold up and share that, this will also be a time to do that. We want to remember that we want to be brief. This isn't a time for discussion. We have an informal time for discussion following each service, and that's the time where we engage in discussion. So following this musical interlude, we'll open up for an opportunity for those who want to share a joy or a concern or a gleaning from the service to do so. Now, Anne will extinguish our chalice and invite you into the closing words.
Please join me in reading the closing words by Theodore Parker. Be ours a religion, which like sunshine goes everywhere. Yeah. Its temple, all space, its shrine, the good heart, its creed, all truth, its rituals, work of love, its profession of faith, divine living.
Thank you. Okay, let's join in the closing song. When our heart is in a holy place, the lyrics will be on the screen. And think about those times in which your heart has been in a holy place, and let this song be a reminder of that.
With love and amazing grace, when our heart is in a holy place, when we trust the wisdom in each of us, every color, every creed and kind, and we see our faces in each other's eyes, then our heart is in a holy place. When our heart is in a holy place, when our heart is in a holy place, we are blessed with love and amazing grace. When our heart is in a holy place, when we tell our story from deep inside, and we listen with a loving mind, and we hear our voices in each other's words, then our heart is in a holy place. When our heart is in a holy place, when our heart is in a holy place, we are blessed with love and amazing grace. When our heart is in a holy place, when we share the silence of sacred space, and the God of our heart stirs within, and we feel other's faith, then our heart is in a holy place. When our heart is in a holy place, when our heart is in a holy place, we are blessed with love and amazing grace. When our heart is in a holy place,